Ever wonder what actually goes on when you run a KSQL query? We'll take a deep dive into that today on Streaming Audio, a podcast about Kafka, Confluent, and the cloud. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Tim Berglund. Today, I have with me in the studio Hojat Jafarpour. He is a software engineer on the KSQL team. So he's one of the people responsible for creating KSQL, and he's going to answer some questions for us today about how this thing is put together. Hojat, welcome.
Thank you.
Since I've got you here, I wanted to dig into some internals just for fun. KSQL is, of course, an open source thing. The code is on GitHub, and inquiring minds might kind of want to know how it works. I thought we would talk about that a little bit.
Sure. That sounds great.
To get us kicked off, now this is a deep dive discussion, but just briefly, when people ask you what you work on and say it's another software engineer asks you what KSQL is, what's your short answer to that? What is KSQL?
The same thing that we tell everyone, streaming SQL engine on Apache Kafka.
I love it. Yes. So there are messages in Kafka topics, and you want to consume them, and you want to do various kinds of computation with them. And KSQL is a SQL-like language to do that computation.
Exactly. And the main difference with the old systems is that it is a continuous querying system, meaning that your queries keep running forever until you explicitly terminate. Unlike old systems that you query, you get the results, and everything is done. So there's a fundamental difference here.
And that's a weird thing when you sit down at the KSQL command line for the first time and do a select from a topic, it doesn't stop, right?
Exactly.
Even, so you see all the data, you're like, wait, is this thing broken? You know, but no, that is how it works. These things, there is no last message.
Correct. As long as you have input, you are going to see the output.
Correct. So speaking of that KSQL CLI, when I open that up, you can go to, confluent.io/download and download the Confluent platform and run the quick start, and it has you doing things at the KSQL CLI right away. What are the pieces architecturally? What are the different processes that are running, and how do they interact there?
So there are multiple things that you need to be able to run your KSQL queries. The first and foremost is Apache Kafka, because your data is in Apache Kafka, and you're going to produce the results in the Apache Kafka as topics. Then you need a KSQL server. The KSQL server can run in different modes. Currently, we support two major modes, interactive mode and headless, or I also call it application mode. In this talk, I think we mostly focus on the interactive mode, which exposes a REST API for the user that you can actually interact with the server. One of the ways to interact with server is using our CLI. You can also use our web UI in Confluent Control Centers, or C3. And you can also interact with the REST API through your own programs. So there are three main places that you're looking at when you're using the CLI: Kafka, KSQL server, and the CLI, which is the client.
And that CLI, in this case, is really a REST client. The server is running and just being a REST server, and the CLI is submitting your queries.
Exactly.
To the REST
CLI area. Is another client. As I mentioned, you can have different clients as long as you interact through the exposed REST API, you should be able to submit your queries and get the results and submit any other KSQL commands to this server.
Cool. So when I type in that first query that I type in, I'm at the CLI and I'm working from the quick start or doing whatever it is I'm doing. Type a query in, I hit enter. Walk us through what happens like all the way through. I hit enter. You've already said there's this REST interface.
Correct.
Then it hits the server. Now what happens?
All right. So step by step, it's going to be more like abstract steps. I'm not going to go too much details in each of them. But when you submit your query, let's say you have a create stream as select, which is going to read from one topic and generate results into another topic. When you send this query to the server through the REST API, through your CLI, the first step that is happening in the server, assuming that we are doing the interactive mode, is to write this to a command topic. This command topic is used to coordinate among multiple servers that you have. All of the servers subscribe to this command topic. Whenever they see a new command or KSQL statement, they're going to pick it and start executing it. The steps that you're going to have for execution are as follows. When the server reads the statement, let's say, as I mentioned, you have a create stream as select statement, or we call it CSAS. The first step is parsing this. So we have a parser based on Antler, and it receives the query and generates the abstract syntax tree for it. And then this abstract syntax tree is going to be analyzed, and information about what are the schemas for the input topic, what are the column types, and all of those information are going to be analyzed. And using this analysis, we are going to create a logical plan for execution of the query. The logical plan is very similar to logical plans in any other query processing system. Now that we have the logical plan, from this logical plan, we are going to create a physical plan. In our case, our physical plans are based on Kafka streams, meaning that the queries that we are receiving, we are going to generate Kafka streams applications for that. The physical plan stage takes care of this for us. It gets the logical plan, goes through the logical plan node. It's a tree structure. And from that logical plan, we create a Kafka streams application. Now that we have the Kafka streams application, the server starts its application. And this application continuously is going to be running, fetching data from the input topic, doing any processing that needs to be done, and write the results into the output topic that you specified in your query.
Okay, so it's kind of like you're building your own Kafka Streams application on that Java API. That's really what the KSQL engine is doing.
Exactly. It is underneath, it is generating Kafka Streams applications.
Right. Well, it seems so simple when you put it that way. Like, everybody should write one of these. Of course, in the middle, there's like a lot of complexity that is being hidden. Because if you've ever, those of you who are listening, if you've used Kafka Streams directly, you know it's an incredibly powerful API, and it's got a lot of compelling features that we'll dive into in a future episode of this podcast. But there's a learning curve there, right? It's not, stream processing is not a completely trivial thing. And, Streams brings a lot of power to you and saves you from having to do a lot of stuff that would have been a massive pain with raw consumer code. But that KSQL query text that you're looking at in the CLI is usually a heck of a lot simpler than, doing all that stream processing code yourself.
Exactly. As you mentioned, these are levels of abstraction that the more you go up, the simpler it becomes. But you are, of course, becoming a little bit limited for the features that you have available. Basically, you can do everything with consumer API, but there's a lot of complexity. You have to take care of all of the details. Kafka Streams provides another layer on top of consumer API that simplifies a lot of things, but still you have to use programming language like Java or Scala to be able to write this. KSQL is another layer on top of this stack that tries to simplify even more. So a lot of things that you would do in, let's say, 100 lines of Java code, in KSQL you can do with 2 lines of SQL code. So the whole concept is that we make more abstraction and open the stream processing for much wider audience that they may not necessarily be like hardcore software engineers who know Java and know Kafka very well, but they can just learn SQL language, and now they can actually interact with Kafka topics and write queries and process them with a couple of lines of SQL.
Exactly. And even if you are a hardcore software engineer and you're just not on the JVM, then now you've got a way in through a nice REST interface. Chances are you're using a language that can open TCP sockets and concatenate strings, so you could handle a REST interface. And so this brings stream processing to you, even if you're not, Java is not your
exactly,
home.
Exactly. As you said, the REST API that we have in the KSQL server opens the door for any language that can interact with the REST API to be able to actually do stream processing. They can just submit the queries that they have, and they can read the results from the topic that the query is writing to it. Another point that you kind of reminded me to mention here, even if you are a hardcore Java programmer and you know the streams inside out.
Right. Maybe you're just tired.
Exactly. A lot of value from KSQL. Imagine that you're doing a very simple pipeline. Instead of writing 200 lines of code, you can write it in like 5 lines of KSQL statements. And just imagine how much time it would save for you from maintaining that code, avoiding the bugs in the Java code, deployment process that you had to do all of them yourself. Here you have 5 lines of code. It's much easier to understand what is going on, and other people can understand your code much easier.
Right. And you remind me of, you're talking about the levels of abstraction that you walked us through, you know, from consumer to streams to KSQL. My favorite Grady Booch quote of all time is, I guess I'll paraphrase, he said something like, the history of software engineering is one of increasing levels of abstraction.
Right.
And that's always the case. We are constantly under pressure to build more with, you know, it doesn't seem like much, you know, without getting a lot more resources. The problems we solve get more complex. We make these higher levels of abstraction.
Exactly. So now with, let's say, with KSQL, you can actually focus on your business logic instead of focusing on programming details of your streams apps or consumer producers details. That a lot of things like this, details like this are taken care of by KSQL layer or stream layers. So you can have less things to worry about underneath these layers and more focus on your business logic and exactly things that you want to do.
Right. With, like you said, always trade-offs. I sometimes compare the producer and consumer API to assembly language. I call them the assembly language of Kafka. That's a little bit of an overstatement, but only a little bit, you know, compared to KSQL. You could do anything in assembly language. It's just kind of hard. You know, you have to carry all your water yourself. And I guess one of the trade-offs here is deployment. I mean, you've talked about the server. And so in a production environment, we're going to have a cluster of KSQL servers, and that's where our code runs. And that can be a simplifying thing. Like maybe that's very, very good. Or on the other hand, you know, you might have an application where you've got microservices and you really want your stream processing code to be integrated into the app. And that's when you think, well, let me stay at that lower level of abstraction and be a streams programmer.
Exactly. The point that you're making is very valid. Like, depending on your use case and application, now you have different options to choose from. That power of choosing from those options is the real value that you can have here. Because in maybe 80% of cases, you just want to do a pipeline of streaming, reading from topics, do some transformations or joins and enrichment and generate a new result. You can do a lot of these things with KSQL. Maybe in that 20% of the cases, you really want like some functionality that you cannot express in SQL language. Then you can go to the streams layer, for instance, that provides more power for you. And there are cases that you absolutely have to go to the consumer producer APIs.
Yeah.
And that's also an option for you. So the point is that now you have all of these options, and depending on your application and your context, you can easily say that which one fits to your application and pick that.
Right.
And that's a very powerful concept that we have here.
It is. And to some degree, I'm fanboying here and I should move on to the next question. But it's just, this is a little bit of a software architecture insight as well. You've got those layers, those three layers we've described, and they're all public, right? Each one,
correct,
and historically, each one was built in terms of the last. We built streams and, you know, it's Kafka. So you're a producer and consumer. You have to be. And then when KSQL came along, we built that in terms of streams, and each layer is documented and known. So you can actually, you can look at the code, you can read the docs for how streams work, you can read the docs for how producer and consumer work. So when you have to, when the abstraction leaks and you have to go down a layer, it's like not a problem.
Exactly.
We're still building layers up.
Exactly. Let me add another important point here. The part that we kind of, the boundaries of each of these applications are Kafka topics, meaning that, for instance, in case of KSQL, you read from topic, you write to topic. In Kafka streams, you read from topic, you write the results to the topic. So nothing prevents you from mixing and matching these things. For instance, if you have a big pipeline and like 80% of the pipeline can be expressed in simple SQL queries, you can write that 80% in KSQL, and you know that the result of that KSQL part is written to a topic. You can use another streams app, for instance, reading from that topic and writing to another topic. So you can have a pipeline that has KSQL streams and even consumer producer API based app, and all of them working together to accomplish a big, let's say, streaming ETL job or alerting job or machine learning job that you may not be able to use KSQL or streams or consumer producer API for all of it, but for different parts, you can orchestrate this pipeline with different components.
Yes, very true. Now, let's let's get back into the engine. And you had walked us through, the text is parsed into an AST. And then that AST, you walk the AST and you make a logical query plan, which itself is also a tree. You walk that tree, you make a physical query plan. And that is all to anybody who took databases or has looked into database design, that's textbook, right? You do those things.
Exactly.
Walk us through that. Let's say there's a query with a stream table join. So I've got some stream of events, and in the message, there's some field that is an ID that refers to a record in a table somewhere. And I've got that built as a KSQL table. I want to enrich that stream, looking up stuff from the table. So I join, and then maybe filter. Now, this is a pretty common example in a lot of our tutorial stuff. We show this as like the first time you ever look at a join is this is what we do. Stream table join and filter.
Very, very common use case. Always see these kind of use cases that you have a stream that you want to enrich that stream with dimension information. For instance, usually in the multidimensional OLAP systems, you had these, but now you see this in stream processing very often. So in this case, you write one single join statement in KSQL, for instance. You say the create stream results, for instance, as select the columns that you need from the stream and join it with table with its specific criteria. And in the where clause, you specify your filter. It's a very simple query.
Right.
So when you send it to the KSQL engine, first of all, as I mentioned, let's assume that you're running in the interactive mode. This query is going to be shared among all of the servers. So let's say you have three instances of KSQL engine. You send it to one of them. This server writes it to the command topic that is shared by all of these servers.
Oh, yeah.
All of them are going to read it from the command topic.
Let me stop you there. So assuming there's a cluster of servers, let's say there's three KSQL servers. Obviously, my CLI is just connected to one of them.
Correct.
Sends the query to that one, and it writes it to this command topic, which is a topic in the Kafka cluster that the servers are using to coordinate.
Exactly. Okay. Every KSQL cluster has its own command topic. So that's something that belongs to that cluster. So you can have multiple clusters. Each of them has their own command topic. So they are independent of each other. They don't know each other, but the nodes inside the cluster coordinate through the command topic. So that's another reason that you can easily add more nodes to the cluster without even having the other nodes know about it, because everything is going through that command topic. So even if you lose servers, it doesn't matter. The other ones are going to be fine because they don't need to know each other.
Got it.
So that is a very important point in simplifying deployments of KSQL compared to other systems that cluster nodes need to cooperate tightly with each other. Here, they're independent of each other, but still they are cooperating in execution, which is being enabled by Kafka. So that's an important case compared to other systems. But going back to the query processing, what happens when any of these engines receives your join query that we discussed earlier? After receiving the join query, it's going to go through the steps that we mentioned. It's going to parse the query, analyze the query, create a logical plan. In the logical plan right now, we do some simple optimization. These are role-based optimization. For instance, we always try to run the filters before, let's say, projections or aggregations. So this way, you will filter the events that you don't need to process earlier than pushing them over up in the pipeline. After this, we have a logical plan. As I mentioned, we need to convert this logical plan to our physical plan, which in this case, it's a Streams app. We use Streams DSL API to create a Streams app. So we're going to traverse our logical plan. And for every node, we are going to create the corresponding physical plan implementation. And at the end, we are going to have a Streams topology generated from our logical plan. This stream topology is exactly the same as any other Kafka Streams app. So you can easily say, okay, I have this Kafka Streams app, start, and it's going to just start execution, start pulling data from the input topics and do all of the processing. And in this case, it's going to do the join, do filtering, and do projection, and write to the sync topic. There are a couple of interesting details that KSQL takes care of it for you. For instance, if you are doing a join in Kafka Streams, you are responsible to make sure that the stream and table have the same key, or the stream is partitioned with the same key as you are doing the join with.
Yes.
In the Kafka Streams case, you are responsible as a user, you are responsible for doing these repartitioning and making sure that the join keys align. KSQL takes care of this for you. So if you have a stream that's not keyed by the join criteria, we repartition that stream for you and make sure that the join is able to do the join in the next step.
Okay, that'll be repartitioned to a topic that gets a name assigned for you and is automatically created.
Exactly, exactly. So KSQL uses Kafka Streams, as I mentioned, and therefore very tightly coupled with Apache Kafka. So a lot of operations that other frameworks or platforms are doing themselves, one of them and one of the most important of them is Shuffle, we are doing them through Kafka topics. Unlike other systems that they have end-to-end network communication, here we just do a repartitioning in an internal topic in Kafka and then read the repartition topic. So this helps a lot in simplifying our architecture. That's one of the reasons that, as I mentioned, KSQL servers don't need to know each other, because all of these collaboration goes through Kafka topics. And Kafka being a battle-hardened system, most of these things are very robust, very scalable, very fault-tolerant. So it helps a lot in simplifying deployment of both Kafka Streams apps and consequently KSQL systems.
That is that's a really cool insight. Because anybody who ever tried operationalizing or optimizing a MapReduce job, there's a reason that Shuffle is not mentioned in the MapReduce moniker, right? I mean, it's universally a phase in the MapReduce process. It's always map, shuffle, reduce, and it's universally the terrible one, right? That's
yeah,
hard
the
to...
bottleneck. Usually the bottleneck is the shuffle,
right?
Or you need to make sure that the shuffle is optimized as much as possible.
Yeah. So, you know, we try not to mention it, but it was always there. And yeah, so that automatic repartitioning is the closest cousin to that invisible thing lurking there, but it gets
exactly.
you out of the game of actually shuffling.
Exactly. It kind of piggybacks on the Apache Kafka capabilities. And as I mentioned, it's a very robust and fault tolerance, highly scalable operation now for us. So we have this shuffle through the Kafka topic operation for free,
right?
Because it is provided by Kafka and it is scalable, fault tolerance, so we can depend on it and it works perfectly in the streaming context.
Right. So digging into that join there now, you said if you have to, if for the query to succeed, KSQL will repartition the stream. And that's because fundamentally to be able to join a stream to a table, it'll repartition the stream or the table, because to join a stream to a table, they have to be co-partitioned, right? Same number of partitions and same
yes.
message key.
Exactly. So we are doing the join based on the message key, as you mentioned.
Yes.
So we need to make sure that before join, both your stream and table have the same key, same number of partitions. So they are co-located. The values with the same key co-located in the same node.
Right. So digging into that, in that Streams app, when we walk the physical plan where, you know, you're actually programming a stream builder object, you know, you're building the topology.
Mm-hmm.
And when that topology runs, the partitions of those source topics, first of all, backing up a step, however many partitions the source topics have, those will be allocated to the nodes in the cluster, just like a Kafka consumer group, right?
Exactly. It works on the Kafka consumer group management. So let's say you have three instances of server. Each of them compile your application or your queries into Kafka Streams application.
Because they coordinate it through the
Kafka Streams application. Exactly.
Command topic.
But each of them is going to read subset of the partitions. Kafka is going to give, let's say, if you have six partitions for your input topics, it's going to give two of them to server one, two of them to server two, two of them to server three. And if you lose server three, for instance, Kafka is going to rebalance and give the partitions that are located for the server three to the remaining servers.
Right.
So as you see, a lot of fault tolerance and scalability concepts are kind of piggybacked over Kafka's fault tolerance and scalability. So, and that the protocols that Kafka has are very robust and battle hardened. So we get all of these for free in the Streams layer and also in KSQL layer.
Nice, which that's architectural genius on your team's part.
Exactly. So, that significantly simplifies our maintenance of our cluster. As I mentioned, you can easily add more servers and everything is going to be handled for you. You don't need to tell other servers that, hey, there's a new server, because Kafka is taking care of rebalancing the load among the new servers, right, or remaining servers if you have failures.
Nice. So drilling down to this join, I like your setup. There are six partitions, three nodes in the KSQL cluster. That means every node is going to have two partitions. So when the stream topology is running, there'll be a thread for each one of those partitions. Is that right? Is that, tell me about the streams resources, how they're used.
Well, there's going to be a task for each of them, and a thread can run multiple of these tasks, meaning that for every partition, you're going to have a streaming task, and a thread can run multiple of those tasks, meaning you can have you can adjust the number of threads in your streaming apps. So we are going now to the streams layer, which you can control these from this KSQL layer too, using set or unset for properties.
Control the sizing of the thread pool and all that.
Exactly. You can, by default right now, we set the number of threads in every node to 4. If you see that, oh, I have 50 partitions, and in every node I have, let's say, in every instance I have 10 partitions assigned, you may want to increase that 4 to, let's say, 5. But doesn't mean that with 4 you cannot run. Still, you're going to be able to run, but each thread is going to process multiple partitions.
Yeah, multiple tasks, to be precise. And that
exactly.
The whole concurrency management.
Because there's a one-to-one mapping between task and partition. Yeah, each thread is going to run multiple tasks.
Got it. One-to-one task mapping between task and partition, and then many-to-one between task and thread. And
correct.
It's a good thing the framework's there, because we don't have to write that code. So there's a task per partition. And so each task doing a join now, the task is basically consuming the stream. And when a new event arrives on the stream, how does it do the join? Like walk us through that. This is streams layer, I know, but
right.
The question comes up.
Yeah, this is a very important concept. The different join operations that we have in streams, there are very subtle differences between joins that we have in streaming environment and the normal database joins that you have two tables, all of the data is available, and you join. In the streaming environment, you have a notion of time, and this time dictates what would be the result of your join. Let me give you an example. Let's say I am joining a page view stream with a user table, and I want to get the address for every user. Right? So depending on when the stream tuple arrives, you may have different values for the join. Imagine user one had address set to Palo Alto, and the day after updated the address to San Francisco.
Ah.
Right? Yeah. So now if your stream arrives before the update of the address, your join should show Palo Alto, right? Because at that time, the address was Palo Alto. But the streams that the stream records that arrive after update of the address, they should show San Francisco as address when they are joining, not Palo Alto, correct? And if you have a late arriving data in the stream side that the timestamp is before the change to San Francisco, that value should join with the value in the table that belongs to that time.
Yes.
So you see, now knowing this concept, you can easily justify the results that you see in stream table join. Because sometimes you may see that, for instance, oh, the address is San Francisco, but I see Palo Alto as address. And the reason is that because when that record happened, the address actually was Palo Alto. The San Francisco change happened after that you received that record.
Yes.
Makes sense?
Yes, it does.
So, this is very important concept, as I mentioned. And knowing these concepts and understanding the notion of time in streaming would significantly help to kind of understand the results in streaming world and in KSQL. It would make sense, oh, now that's the reason, for instance, I see this output and I don't see the output that I would expect, because time matters.
Yeah, time matters. And it isn't a table-table join in the way we're used to. And this, by the way, this is, you know, the dark side of the greatness of a streaming SQL. KSQL is great because almost nobody really has to learn it, right? Like I'll show this to new developer audiences and everybody's like, oh, okay, I know what that means. And it's super intuitive. You already know the syntax, you get the concepts, but then the dark side is you don't really, I mean, there is some stuff you have to throw out and rethink, and time is one of those things.
But yeah, but exactly. The point is that now that you can write these queries in a couple of lines and in a couple of sentences that we discussed earlier, now people can easily understand, oh, time matters, and I can understand time notion in the joins, for instance. That combination gives you a powerful tool that previously you didn't have such system or easily available systems like this. Now it makes it available for everyone.
Right, right. Like when, I mean, this has certainly happened when people have tried to represent streaming data or event-based data in relational databases, you can do it. It's unpleasant, but this whole thing just, you know, there's a lot of code you're going to have to write if you're going to try to build this on top of legacy data management technology.
Exactly. So KSQL and underneath Kafka Streams takes care of these complexities, which value I should map, like I should join with, or if the result of join conforms with the semantics that I'm defining here based on streaming semantics. So you don't need to think about these. The results that you get are the results that you expect in the streaming world.
Right, right. All right. Well, Hoca, we are up against time. This has been amazing, and this will not be the last time you are in the streaming audio studio, but I want to say thank you for sharing what you got and helping people learn more about how KSQL is put together on the inside.
Sure. I enjoyed it a lot. And I want to just add another point at the end. All of the things that we discussed here, we have a Kafka Summit talk from London that includes slides and more details on architecture and what happens under the hood in KSQL. I would strongly recommend people to take a look at that. And if they have any questions, they can, of course, reach out to us.
I would also strongly recommend you view that talk. So that's just Google Kafka Summit London 2018. KSQL, it's called KSQL 201 or something like that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. KSQL 201. I forget who gave that talk, but he was pretty good. That was.
But I remember that you suggested the title.
Ah, well, I'll take credit for that. You take credit for the talk. Hoca, thanks for being a part of Streaming Audio.
Thank you very much.
And there you have it. I hope that was helpful to you. If you've got questions, you can ask me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on any of our YouTube videos. Your question might be featured on the next episode of Streaming Audio. And feel free to subscribe to our YouTube channel and this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through iTunes, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover the podcast and just generally helps us get the word out. We appreciate your support. See you next time.